Hey, good morning and welcome to another edition of Quest Youth Radio, better known as Quest Community Vibrations, live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. And before we begin, I'd like to give you our introduction. Music, like poetry, has a message, and history is like a diamond that shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend like definitions. News can create a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, we're about to pull back the curtain and see the real contributions, and you will find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, vibrations. So I want to thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our diaspora. Without any further ado, I would like to introduce our student host, Mr. Walter Pierce. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, everybody. And again, welcome to Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. And to start off the show, I want to start off with the diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, the theme of today's show with my diamond is going to be on education and teaching. And see, I picked somebody who perfectly fits that category, somebody who's all about teaching and informing the next generation and the people around it. And that person's name is Mary McLeod Bethune. Now see, Mary McLeod Bethune was a determined woman. She helped make education available to thousands of Black Americans. When Mary was a child, many people thought that education was a waste of time for Black children. But Mary wanted to go to school, and her parents supported her. She graduated from Moody Bible Institute in 1895 and afterward taught school in Georgia. In 1904, she moved to Daytona, Florida to establish a school for girls. Mary had only $1.50 in her pocket when she arrived to Daytona, but that didn't stop her. She sold sweet potatoes pie to raise money for her school. She asked for donations from churches, clubs, and anyone who would help. Her school became Bethune-Cookman University. It is an example of what a determined person can accomplish. Mary used that same determination to fight for other equal rights for her people. She founded the National Council of Negro Women in 1935. Lastly, she was also an advisor for four presidents of the United States, and her legacy lives on. And that concludes the little piece I had on Mary McLeod Bethune. But there's still more to talk about of why she is so prominent and why she should be so recognized today, especially. And I just want to go to the first thing she did was how courageous she was to go to a place like Daytona, Florida with very, very little money, barely any, nothing, and still had the courage to go start up a school for girls. And was able to raise enough money to do this, you know? Of course, she only started off with about five girls. Excuse me. But the school was able to raise up to over 200 students, which in today's standards might not seem like a lot of students in a school. But you have to think about that certain time period where some children were under the impression that school wasn't for them and it was not going to help them, and they were basically being drifted away from school and going into work. And even during these times, she was still able to manage and get 200 students in a classroom so that they could be informed and inform others. It's an amazing and a great accomplishment. I can't say how great it is. It's really good what she did. And then you could and then her school turning into Bethune-Cookman University, because the co-ed of all other students, which is male, her still being the lead of the school, and school is still being successful, and the school is still in place till this day in Daytona, Florida. So the school is obviously a successful school. It is something that is one of her biggest accomplishments, but it's not her only accomplishment, because still she was able to start up some civil rights groups, especially the National Council of Negro Women. You know, that is a huge organization still to this day, and she's her probably one of her biggest accomplishments, or you could say, is the one with the being an advisor for four presidents. And the reason I say that is because just during that time period, you know, usually all cabinets were, the laws and everything were not always in the favor of our people, but her being able to have an advisor spot to get a voice in Congress for four presidents, including, I believe, Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, and especially Franklin D. Roosevelt, who favored her the most, and they had very good chemistry. And, you know, she was able to have a voice in Congress so that black people was able to get a voice and have some of their laws that favor them pass, so that we could progress this movement. That is just the accomplishments that Mary McLeod Bethune accomplished in her lifetime, and, you know, her legacy still lives on today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great job. I want to take a moment to say, this morning I wrote that the struggle never ended for African Americans in the USA, and in fact it still continues. Have we forgotten the lessons of our past, or have we even bothered to know them? Now, I was encouraging and prompting people and trying to promote our program, and I was just simply saying, you can get a window seat, a glimpse of our history, and pull back the blind and help us to become a better group of people in our nation. Not that we were ever flawed, right? So, that being said, I'd like to introduce Mr. Shelton Harris. Mr. Harris, from the statement that I just read, and from Mary McLeod or Methoid McClune, I've just messed her name up. What are your comments or questions to Walter?
Well, first I have to say good morning. And this was a very important person that he had brought up today. You know, she was actually a pioneer when it comes to education for our people. And the things that she put into place, like Walter was saying, must have been very important, because they're still in place today. So it was something that had a legacy to whatever she was doing. But back to what you were saying, it was, you know, I look at it as, you know, whenever it comes down to our people in this country, whenever we're needed, we always step up to the plate. Whenever there's like a war or whenever there's some kind of anything like that, and they need people of color to step up to the plate to help America be America, you know, then all of a sudden we're assets to the society. But then when that problem goes away and they don't have any really need for us to do anything initially, then we go right back to being like an alien in our own country. And, you know, and some of these things comes from not understanding that there is a history, and there is a systemic racism based in our society. And these things have to be understood before they could be erased. And a lot of stuff comes from looking into yourselves and just researching the kind of things in history. Because Marcus Garvey said, if you don't learn the problems or the reasons for history, you're going to be forced to repeat them. And, you know, and these are the kind of things that we as a community need to do if we want to be a true fabric of this American society.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to come right back to you, but Tanisha Gardner, how much from what you've heard and what you know, but please make a comment or give us a question.
Everything what everyone said is definitely on point. We are very powerful people. We are trailblazers and we are pioneers. Whatever we touch, we turn into gold. So I guess we are the ultimate alchemist, as we should say. So that being said, we are very powerful. We have to know our power and execute our power. And just the simple fact that she had five children, and from the five children to actually having a university now, that is so powerful because she recognized what the problem was and she created a solution. And from that solution, she created her own legacy that still lasts till this day. And that's what we have to do. We have to find what's in ourselves that we can do to be able to create the legacies that's going to keep growing for our community and for our nation and for the world.
Okay. Thank you so much. Don't you go anywhere. Stay on the line. Val, our number one fan, is on the line, and I know you've heard, and I know you didn't expect to be called upon, but at this point, this juncture of our program, I'd like to get some feedback, a question or comment from you.
Good morning. Well, my feedback, as always, is I'm thankful for the information that I receive when I listen to the show. And Mary McLeod Bethune was a very, very important person in our history. And, you know, just to, you know, think about the determination that she had, you know, to start a school to educate our youth and built the support that is able to continue to maintain and expand the university that she started so many years ago. But it's, you know, it's just, you know, wonderful each time, each week I listen to hear about the glorious history of our people. And thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for joining us. And thank you, more importantly, for being our number one fan. And now, it's time for our next segment of Chains of Events, which is an interpretation of the news as it affects the minority community from the alloys of Newark. It is a report on events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. Chains of Events reveals one event to another, and it is an interpretation of those things. And you, the listener, we hope to provide you with information so that you know what's happening. Now, I tried to get through that the best way I could, Mr. Harris, but it's on you now.
Yes, it is. And today's chain of events really had me thinking about a lot of what is called rap music that is broadcast and streamed today has no resemblance to what it was before corporate sponsorship. As long as it was looked upon as non-artistic music by lowly individuals from the hood, diversity and content was able to flourish and varied dramatically, mainly towards positive personal outlooks and the need to increase your knowledge of yourself and your culture. Numerous groups championed these ideas, crews like the X-Clan, Public Enemy, Parrish, Immortal Technique, along with many others, saw rap as just an extension of hip-hop culture and not an entity into itself. One of the main people that I feel focused on hip-hop as a culture was KRS-One. He believed in the concept of not just entertaining people, but educating them at the same time. Today's rendition is called You Must Learn by Boogie Down Productions. Just like I told you, You Must Learn. It's calm yet wild, the style I speak, just filled with facts that will never get weak in the heart. In fact, you'll start to illuminate knowledge on others in a song. Let me demonstrate. the force of knowledge. Knowledge reigns supreme. The ignorant is ripped to smithereens. What do you mean, would you say I'm rebellious because I can't accept the things that you're telling us? What are you selling us? The Creator dwells in us. I sit in our unknown class while you're failing us. I failed your class because I ain't with your reasoning. You're trying to make me you by seasoning up my mind with this Jane C. Vern John walking the hardcore New York streets. It doesn't exist. No way, no how. It seems to me that school is, that's this ebony, African-American history should be pumped up steadily. But it's not, and this has got to stop. See spot run, run get spot, insulting a black mentality and a black way of life, or a jet black family. So I conclude with one concern that you must learn. I believe that if you're teaching history filled with straight-up facts, no mystery, teach the student what he needs to be taught, because black and white kids both have got taken shorts. When one doesn't know about the other's culture, ignorance swoops down just like a vulture. Because you don't know that you ain't just a janitor, it's because nobody told you about Benjamin Banneker, a proud black man that invented the almanac. Can't you see where KRS is coming at? With Eli Whitney, Haile Selassie, Granville Woods made the walkie-talkie. Louis Latimer improved on Edison. Charles Drew did a lot for medicine. Garrett Morris made the traffic light. Harriet Tubman freed the slaves at night. Madam C.J. Walker made the straightening comb. But you don't know this if you weren't shown. The point I'm getting, it might be harsh, because we're just walking around brainwashed. So what I'm saying is not to diss a man. We need a 1989 school system, one that caters to the black return, because you must learn. Just like I told you, you must learn. It said that was one of the songs that I, you know, you really have to hear it. You know, with the music and stuff behind it, this is very powerful sayings that this brother was talking about at the time. And that's You Must Learn. That's our chain of events for today.
Okay, so we're going to go right to Tanisha. And you know a little bit about KRS-One. Talk to us about hip-hop and this particular excerpt that Mr. Harris presented to us this morning.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hip-hop is very powerful. Hip-hop is universal, and that's the truth. Anything that we touch, like I said, becomes gold. Everyone loves our swagger. Everyone, whatever we do, people want to emulate us. It's like everybody want to be black, but they don't want to really be black. Is that kind of like a connotation? So it's like definitely through the history-wise, and that's why they try to promote, I guess, now with all the negativity, because they know how powerful we are, especially if they put out the messages of us being who we were as our ancestors-wise. They know that would definitely change the minds of men, especially like Margaret Garvey said, you know, in order to, you know, liberate the minds of men, you got to touch their soul. So if you're touching someone's soul and liberate their mind at the same time, that's very powerful. And how do you do that? You do it through symbolism, and you also do it through visuals. So what's more powerful than hip-hop? And especially at a time when it was about black power, and then you had, like, all the different, you know, artists that was coming out talking about how powerful we were, you know? And it's like now it's like hip-hop has steered away from that. But I guess it's a balance, because they have to put the balance back, and that's what we have to do. We have to be able to take our music back and make it so we are feeding, you know, the youth, you know, both sides. Because everybody do like to party, but at the same time, you got to take, you know, you got to take time to think. You got to take time to critical think. And I guess some of the youth now, with a couple of songs that's coming out because, you know, of the police reform, and they telling the youth. So it's like they listening. So it's just like we just have to feed them messages that's going to be empowered, and but it's up to us and we have to gear them into the light. So definitely hip hop is very powerful. It's through China, it's through Europe, like is nationwide. So we have to, I guess, take control of how we want our music to be. And if we don't like it, we have a right to go against, you know, the high echelons and tell them, like, listen, this is not how we want to be perceived anymore. And then once that starts to change, the power would definitely be resurrected back to us.
Okay. Walter, any comments as it pertains to Mr. Harris and his excerpt of KRS-One?
You know, KRS-One, he's somebody, of course, before my time, but he relates to some of the rappers and some of the artists of today's generation. You know, the way they talk about their community and speak up for social justice issues in our community. But the question I wanted to ask is, why do you believe that KRS-One wasn't as mainstream or as popular as what people would believe or realize? Thanks.
Oh, that question was directed towards me. I feel as if, when hip hop first came out, it was just in certain communities and it wasn't a widespread, you know, information gatherer. But now, once it started to become, you know, more popularized around the world, some of the things that we were saying were really kind of contrary to the everyday system, you know. And whenever anybody steps up and starts to do something that's going to shake the cage of the system that we're living in, they're always going to have some kind of backlash. And the fact that we don't own any of our media outlets, and at the time we hardly had any. It's a little more flexible now, but the only people who were going to express our opinions was going to be people from outside of our community. And their focus on what they were trying to express might not be the same thing that we're trying to talk about. And, you know, and you can hear, you know, because I always use the analogy that you can hear a song that you hate, but after you hear it 10,000 times, you're humming along with everybody else. And, you know, and it's that repetition that changes the way people think about things. And he was saying some stuff that was really kind of tough. And I think that's, you know, that's my rendition of what they think, or they think is why he wasn't as popular. You know, even though he's still doing it now, you know, he wasn't as popular as I think he should have been.
Probably because of his willingness to make vibrations, to make waves. Anyway,
right.
We're going to continue with our program into our next segment of Curtain, which is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtains of the stage. You see, many recording artists and companies have grown rich from support of the community. But what benefits has the community gained from the artist? Curtains is a review of their musical growth and history, the impact of a particular style and genius, and the general moods and attitudes of the listening audience. Musical, lyrical, and social consciousness as presented by an artist over a period of time and CD releases. Curtains serves best as an introduction to and an exploration of a particular artist and today his genius and his involvement in influencing all people's style and creativity in the world. Mr. Harris, once again.
Okay, rap is something that you do. Hip-hop is something that you live. These are the words of Lawrence Krishna Parker, also known as KRS-One. He dreamed of being a graffiti artist and an MC. His mother preached African history and spiritualism and pushed him to excel at school. But because of continuing differences of opinion, at 16, KRS left home to live on the streets in New York. This was in 1981. He didn't see his mother again for 7 years. He slept in New York City parks and on the F train, and took odd jobs, but read a lot of books in the Brooklyn Public Library. At 17, he earned his high school equivalency diploma and considered attending the School of Visual Arts. With the distrust in institutions, he ditched the college education and ran with the United Artists Graffiti Crew, headed up by Fab Five Freddy. He used the moniker KRS-One for Chris is Number One when marking with aerosol cans. At 20 years old, he moved into Brooklyn's Franklin Armory Men's Shelter. It was there he developed his skills as an MC, from routine verbal sparring with other residents in the shelter. His social caseworker, a college graduate named Scott Sterling, was 22 years old, but was affiliated with the L.A. Rock Gang and hailed from the same projects. Scott was a part-time weekend DJ at a club, the Brooklyn International. KRS looked up to Scott along with two other MCs, and they formed a group called Scott LaRock and the Celebrity Three. They dropped their first single in 1984 called Advance that showcased KRS's alarming and unique rhyming styles over dark, spasmodic beats. The group soon broke up. KRS and Scott formed a group called 1241, which spawned the release of Success is the Word through Sleeping Bag Records and received some radio play on WBLS's Mr. Magic's Rap Attack with resident DJ Marley Marr. After obtaining a demo tape, Magic brushed the group off because they were not yet known as Boogie Down Productions then. It was at that time KRS went back to the shelter to write up the legendary Throwdown cult anthem, The South Bronx, released under the name of Boogie Down Productions, that answered Queen's record called The Bridge, produced by Marley Marr and played regularly on Mr. Magic's Rap Attack. KRS-One and Scott LaRock hit the underground buzz, and the pair was signed to an illegal pornography operation under the company of Candy Rock Candy Productions. And somehow they convinced the owners to give them an advance when they started of their starting capital. And with that advance, they formed a record subsidiary called B-Boy Records. After about 12 single releases, the Criminal Minded album was finally surfaced. At the height of his career in 1987 to 1990, KRS-One held a defined reputation as a furious, politically driven and consciousness rapper, dubbed the teacher because of his strong political overtones in his lyrics. Chris thought of himself to be hip-hop's self-educated Malcolm X figure. This is blatantly illustrated the front cover on the BDP's album, By All Means Necessary. He kept these teachings throughout his years involved with BDP, especially after the tragic murder of his partner, Scott LaRock, together with the death of a young fan during a fight at a 1988 Boogie Down Productions and Public Enemy concert. This led Chris to create a foundation for public awareness called Stop the Violence Movement. He structured an all-star and a single self-destruction, which raised more than $500,000 for the National Urban League in 1989. He continued spreading his social commentary views on later BDP albums, concentrating on subjects of black-on-black crime, education, spirituality, and police brutality. During that time, the New York Times invited him to write editorials on the op-ed section in their paper and address colleges across America with a 40-city lecture tour. By 1999, KRS had secured a position as a vice president of A&R at Reprise Records and moved out west to Southern California. He founded the Temple of Hip Hop and released a new album called Chris Styles in 03, and which was preceded by KRS-One, the mixtape, which included a single, Over Here, a response aimed at fresh recording artist Nelly, the latest upstart MC that was trying to feud with the original Blastmaster. In 04, he provoked controversy when he was quoted by a panel discussing the New York magazine, saying that African Americans cheered when 9/11 happened. The comment drew criticism from many sources, including the poignant bar from the New York Daily News. He responded in defense of his comments in an editorial. He said, "I was asked about why hip-hop is not engaged the current situation anymore, you know, which meaning 9/11. His response was, because it doesn't affect us, or at least we didn't perceive it as affecting us. 9/11 happened to them." He went on to say that, "I'm speaking for the culture now. I'm not speaking about my personal opinion. 9/11 affected them down the block, the rich, the powerful, those who are oppressing us as a culture, Sony, RCA, BMG, BET, MTV. Those are our oppressors. Those are the people that are trying to overcome in hip-hop every day. This is a daily thing. We cheered when 9/11 happened in New York. And we say that proudly because when we were down there at the Trade Center, we were getting hit over the head by the cops, told that you can't come in this building, hustled down to the train station because of the way we dressed and talked and so on, and were racially profiled. So when the planes hit the building, we were like, finally, justice. I just began, and now, of course, some of his friends and family were lost. And when he was starting to talk about, you know, the personal feelings about it, he was interrupted. You know, but over the years, KRS has taken the saying that he is hip-hop. Back in the 80s, he proclaimed that he wanted to use hip-hop as a revolutionary tool for changing the structure of racist America. From searching from the edge of hip-hop world, pushing the boundaries of hip-hop, he finally came to the comprehension that it was not a tool or political program to use as his medium. The teacher discovered it is who he is and what he remains so passionately married to. The belligerent beats, the evolution of styles, the platforms and the ambiguous apparitions of validity and demise. Also, by definition, one of the soul that KRS is one of the soul embodiments of hip hop. His life story is a timeline of the cultural movement. Personally, I think, as Walter was saying earlier, he's a very underrated in the mass media, but the people within hip-hop culture, he has always been a leader. And that was what we found behind our curtain today.
Okay. Okay, you know, I remember the Mr. Magic show before it ended up on BLS, and I also remember how hip hop was new, young, and vibrant, and spoke to the not just the issues of the day, but actually just didn't never held back. And so, that being said, as I try to get a little control here on the control board. I want to bring in Evander. Now, Evander, I know that this might be KRS-One might be a little bit ahead of your time, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, KRS is a little bit, you know, before me, but I think that when you having a platform or being a black artist in any medium, it's difficult to really voice your opinion because you may be afraid of the backlash. So when you think about it, he kind of pioneered a wave of MCs and artists being able to speak up and, you know, trying to lead that, because now you have, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all these different social media outlets where artists can make their voice be heard and kind of give their opinions out there. But he was doing it in a time where, you know, it's very risky to say some things. You may lose record deals, you may lose sponsorships, and, you know, as Mr. Harris was alluding to, he just did it and he felt like he was the leader of the community. So KRS is definitely may not be recognized, you know, maybe underrated in mainstream media, but I definitely think that when you think about people that are hip hop enthusiasts or historians for the rap culture, you can't leave him out.
Absolutely not, right? And him putting together that single Self-Destruction should have led him to the top of well, I'm sure it did. Should have led him to the top of the game. I mean, I still play that song today. Self-Destruction, I mean, wow. But let's bring in Tanisha. Tanisha, you've heard the background information. We've spoken about KRS-One. But from this last historical bio on KRS-One, what are your comments? Okay. Now, yeah, you there? Okay. So, oh, all right.
Oh, can you hear me?
My fault. That was totally my fault.
I feel like the Verizon commercial. Can you hear me now?
Well, hold on. Let me just take a moment to say that everyone, during this pandemic, we have refused to be, you know, left out. We have refused to just take our information and pack up and go home someplace because we all stuck at home. And so that being said, this is a remote show that we're producing to keep our program alive. And so you heard the question. Please comment.
Okay, yes. So like I was saying, he's definitely a pioneer in hip-hop. One of the pioneers in hip-hop, I should say. And definitely we just got to keep the momentum going and keep teaching. And definitely we have to tell it like it is. We got to tell the truth. The truth is going to speak itself. And with the truth, we got to show the facts. So I guess people get caught up in their emotions and not realizing the reality of it. And then when we speak our reality, people are shaken because they know the truth. So when we hit them with the truth, it's hitting them at their core because they know the wrong that they have done or they know the lies that they have put out is going to fall apart. Like William Cooper always said that if you have a mountain of lies and you put a truth on it, eventually that mountain of lies is going to fall down because of that power of that truth. So we always have to put the truth out. And just to, like you said, hip-hop is a culture. A culture means it's a way of life. It's the way that you do things. So when we talk about the five elements of hip-hop, you know, it's about the MCing. MCing is the one who has the power of the word. The word persuades. The word heals. It can also destroy. As they say, the power of the tongue could give life or it could take away life. And that's what we got to remember. And, it goes back to our ancestors. And then it also talks about DJing with the turntables and the beats. And then you got the B-boy with the break dancing. And that's the rhythm of, you know, the vibration that flows through the music that's touching your soul and your spirit. And then you talk about the graffiti. And graffiti is a way of an expression on the wall because when you think about our ancestors of ancient Kemet and how they had the hieroglyphics and it told the story. So those are the things that we have to remember. Our knowledge, and knowledge is very powerful because without knowledge you don't have anything, and that's why with knowledge and wisdom goes hand in hand. You might have knowledge, but you have to have the wisdom to understand how to use it, and that's what hip-hop is. Hip-hop could elevate your spirit or it could bring you down. And that's why it has to be a balance. That's why we have to talk about all things that comes to us and be able to build upon that and create definitely foundations that could be last long and also have that legacy that's going to be able to permeate, you know, throughout the whole world and also our children and their generation.
Okay. Mr. Harris, you've heard the comments. Has it sparked any kind of thought to elaborate on any more on this particular artist, KRS-One?
Yeah, well, they kind of hit everything on the head. And sometimes, you know, from my perspective, I see things based on the time frame that I'm talking through. But I love hearing how the younger generation, I don't want to put myself out there too much, but that the younger generation is really understanding that this is a continual process and that this struggle does not stop and it has to continue and it has to be generational. And the fact that they kind of get it. And, you know, and that's what makes me feel good about all of this.
Okay. I want to say I've been kicked out the room. I don't want to go back. I'm happy with the skin that I'm in and the age that I am. That being said, as a reply to Tanisha on the truth, there's an expression that says that the truth can kill you only once. But to die a death of a lie is a death of a thousand cuts. And so that being said, let the truth be told. And without any further ado, I turn it back over to our student host, Walter Pierce. Walter, you have an opportunity to chime in and also transition into your next segment.
Yes. So, of course, I just finished like the beginning of the show. I did my first diamond on Mary McLeod Bethune. And I want to transition to my next diamond, which these two women are kind of related in the idea they had, but they went in two separate fields. And we're switching over to the field of medicine. Some people listening today probably never heard of Rebecca J. Cole, but I will talk to you about her today. In the mid-18th century, women, black and white, who were forced to live under the domination of males, started to assert themselves. Many wanted to receive training in professions that were formerly only practiced by men. Medicine was one such profession, and in 1849, Elizabeth Blackwell became the first white woman doctor to receive her medical degree. 15 years later, Rebecca Lee, an African-American woman, graduated from New England Medical College. She was closely followed by Rebecca Cole, also an African-American woman, who graduated from the Women's Medical College of Pennsylvania in 1867. There is much speculation as to which doctor, Rebecca Lee or Rebecca Cole, was the first black woman physician to practice in the United States. Both were equally accomplished, but Rebecca Cole achieved some promise from her work with Elizabeth Blackwell. After graduating, Rebecca Cole joined Elizabeth at the New York Infirmary for Women and Children. In addition to running the infirmary, Elizabeth and her sister Emily had started the Blackwell's Tenement House Service in 1866, which was the first medical social service program to be started in the United States. Rebecca Cole was one of the first sanitary visitors. She made house calls to people living in slum neighborhoods and taught women the basics of good hygiene and childcare. As a result of her experience with the Blackwells, when Rebecca returned to Philadelphia, she continued her career in social medicine. She helped start the Women's Directory, which provided medical and legal assistance to women. She practiced medicine in Philadelphia until 1881. Later, she became the superintendent of the House of Destitute Colored Women and Children in Washington, D.C. Rebecca was outspoken about the state of black health care. When W.E.B. Du Bois publicly stated that he felt blacks died of consumption in such high numbers because of their ignorance of hygiene, Rebecca disagreed, blaming slum landlords instead of high mortality rates in the poor areas. Rebecca Cole practiced medicine for 50 years. And that concludes my piece on Rebecca J. Cole. And just to talk a little bit about her, you know, she was the first black woman to go into the field of medicine. And there was actually a woman 15 years earlier who was white named Elizabeth Blackwell. And they both were able to collaborate and team up for a better cause. And basically they were in New York, they started an infirmary so that so that they could be able to take care of these children living in these bad neighborhoods. And, you know, she moved back to Philadelphia where she started the Women's Directory, which helped give assistance and legal assistance to women. But one of the most important things was if she was very outspoken. She challenged W.E.B. Du Bois's theory, which he said that because that blacks are dying in such high consumptions is because of the ignorance of hygiene. But she believed that it was due to the slum landlords and the bad housing that they were living in. And she's right in this part, because if you live in a bad environment with a bad landlord, with bad housing, not in good conditions, of course, bad things, and that could negatively affect your health. And her being an expert in this field, she understood it was her time to be able to speak up to somebody like W.E.B. Du Bois, who, of course, has his respect in his field with leading the NAACP. But this relates to going back to making sure that if you're an expert in a certain field, make sure that you're the voice that people hear, and not from a voice that, you know, somebody who's not an expert. And this is an example of that. Even though W.E.B. Du Bois, of course, he fought for the civil rights of blacks in America by leading the NAACP. Medicine wasn't his that wasn't his expertise. That was her expertise. So her speaking up, it showed and allowed people to listen to her side of it, so that they could have the right information, since she's an expert in the field. And you know, these two women I just talked about today, they relate to each other so much because of the courageousness they had to pursue their field, which a lot of people doubted them in, and just to continue it and be successful in it and be outspoken and not care what anybody else says about them just proves of the people they really are and the recognition that they deserve, especially Rebecca J. Cole, for which a lot of people do not even know about. So, you know, I just talked about them today to bring light to their careers and so people could learn and understand who they really are. Thank you.
Well, great job. And I'm not going to force you to remember. I'm going to tell you. Let me bring this up. When you first joined the radio team for Quest Youth Radio, the first assignment I gave you was to research Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. Do you remember that?
I actually do.
Walter? Right. I remember the look on your face. That being said, right, there's a relevance in Du Bois and Booker T. And there's a discussion that we held behind closed doors, Mr. Harris and I, about W.E.B. Du Bois. And Mr. Harris, I'd like to call upon you to talk about differences as it pertains to Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois behind, let's pretend we're behind the closed door. However, we're not. But we want everybody to know. Do you know what I'm talking about, Mr. Harris?
Actually, yeah, I think I remember our conversation. I always had an issue with W.E.B. Du Bois, even though he was a great scholar and a great activist for our people. But he had a mindset that we should only deal with 10%. You know, they had a thing called the talented 10th. You know, and he used to always use that as, this is going to be our way towards freedom, is that we help these talented 10th and they'll be able to help everybody else. But my question was, being a mathematician, is that if we're going to focus on 10% of our community, that means 90% of our community is not going to get the same kind of focus. And this is where Booker T. Washington came in. He said that we need to be able to build the skills between our entire people to build something for ourselves first, before we try to integrate into American society. So Tuskegee, when it initially opened, was a like industrial and agricultural school, you know, where we can learn how all the skills it would take for us to build our own communities. And he was dealing with everybody, not just the town on the 10th. And this is where the intellectuals and the pragmatists really got at odds with each other. And it was, you know, and when we look at back at it now, over like, because we're talking like over 100 years ago, they were having this conversation. And when we look at it now, I personally think that the town on the 10th kind of went off and did their own thing. And Booker T. Washington's let's work together as a community is really the way to go. Because you can't, you know, like Malcolm X says, you can't go to a table, have a plate in front of you and have nothing on the plate and call yourself a diner. We can't look at things in that way. And or we just go in there and only 10% of our people get to eat and the other 90% have to wait outside. This is a serious issue that still pertains today, you know, because I'm feeling positive about this last election that just went off. And, you know, and everybody is talking about the Divine Nine and all this other Greek organizations type thing. And this is really the children of the talented 10th. Now, what is this going to do for the vast majority of people in our community? You know, they'll be okay. And, you know, that's the problem I've really, and the issue I really had with this over the thing. And I think this, I hope this is what we were talking about. Because this.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Let me add some more fuel to the fire. KRS-One, would do you think he would have a debate with a W.E.B. Du Bois if we were, you know, people always talk about the sports and mixing stuff up. Let's mix up KRS-One and versus W.E.B. Du Bois in a debate. Do you think that they would be agreeable with one another or disagreeable?
No, I would think from my experiences with KRS-One that he would be more of a in the Booker T. Washington like team, you know, because he's down for education of everybody. He's down for the upliftment of everybody, and his vehicle was just through entertainment, but he was really strongly into education, and you know, and even though education is very important on all sides, it's for everybody. It's not just for certain folks. And we can't always depend on other people. Go ahead.
All right. Let me bring in our young scholar. Evander, have you graduated yet?
From Seton Hall?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm on to my next degree. I'm at NYU now, yeah.
Okay. And where are you residing at this time?
I'm currently in New Jersey, so I'm commuting, you know, back and forth.
Okay. All right. So now you heard the discussion that was going on, and just for the audience's sake, Evander was our engineer – was our engineer before the pandemic in the studio. And so I just want to congratulate you on your graduation because we weren't able to, you know, kind of feel it and have you in our presence pandemic. Okay, so we congratulate you. But I know that you are familiar with Booker T. Washington. I know. But let's go back to Walter and Rebecca J. Cole and her disagreement. From all of this information, Mary McLeod Bethune, right? I just want you to unload on us from what you've heard and give us your comment, interpretation, or questions.
You know, everything that everybody's talking about is very informative, and it just touches on to the main idea of what I brought today is just the education and informing piece of what these two women I talked about today. And Rebecca J. Cole especially, you know, just somebody who people just don't really know who they are. You could kind of relate that to somebody like, you know, somebody like KRS-One, I guess, just the notoriety-wise, how, you know, some people really didn't really know about him and know what his message was and how he was always somebody who spoke up and somebody wasn't afraid, because he did make some couple controversial statements in some people's eyes, but he wasn't afraid to say those things. And especially Rebecca J. Cole with W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, her being able to speak up and not being afraid of him and his stature and what he might think, but her understanding the situation at hand with Black people during that period of time, it was something that needed to be said and something that people needed to hear if they wanted to have a better and more healthy life. I guess that's what
okay.
I can add on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Evander, speak to the talent and tenth, right? The difference between a Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yeah, from a, it's definitely a difficult argument. I mean, a difficult position on either side. Like, if you think about how people think or how people of the Black community feel, the Black community can grow or improve. They either have one of two positions, which is let's worry about us, let's do what's best for us, and let's promote us, and let's not try to integrate. And then you have the polar opposite of that, which is that of a Booker T. Washington, which thinks that Blacks can rise up by integration and being a part of, you know, a greater good. The 10% mentality that W.E.B. Du Bois spoke about, it's I can see where he's coming from, but I feel like because of the powers that be, you know, it's kind of difficult to kind of. You ever heard of the analogy "pull yourself up by your own bootstrap"?
Absolutely.
It's kind of like that for me. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't have all the right answers. But I think in order for minorities, you know, any minority community to rise up in amongst the majority, you have to kind of work with them so that you can benefit yourself. I feel like the Black community won't be able to grow to its full potential by just itself. It needs some outside interference. That's what I think, at least.
Transition into this political atmosphere that we're experiencing, this feeling of euphoria from this election. You have some questions, comments as it pertains to this past election. Talk to it.
Yeah.
Evander.
I think this is where I'm going at. So, like, the half of the Black community that may feel that that may side with the W.E.B. Du Bois, they say, well, hey, Joe Biden, he's been in politics for over 40 years. What is he going to really do for the Black community that's different from any other leader? And I think that's a very good and warranted question to ask. I mean, we're definitely going to have to see who he puts into his
cabinet.
Into his cabinet. And I think one of the biggest questions is, like, how can Joe Biden separate himself from previous presidents and do more than just ask for a Black vote?
Okay. I'm going to have to end you there. Tanisha, you've heard all of the information. We talked about social justice, courage, disparity, activism, challenge, proliferation, edutainment, education, freedom, discrimination, civil rights. Tanisha Garner. Comment.
Yes.
Question.
So comment. Self-preservation. You have to know who you are. You have to know thyself. Know thyself means that you have to search whatever you feel. You got to get focused, and you just got to make it happen. You have to live, and you have to be that change maker. So that's what I would say. You be the change that you seek, and you will have the power to back you from the universe.
Okay. Thank you. We're gonna get one of our callers that's on the line, 6778, make a quick comment or have a question. Hit it.
Good question. Good show. Guys, you did really great today. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. We're going to get our number one fan to chime in, question or comment. You have 5 seconds.
Thank you so much. As a proud member of the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs, thank you for highlighting one of our past presidents, Mary McLeod Bethune, as well as one of our members, Rebecca J. Cole.
Okay. And Mr. Harris, talk to us. You have 3 seconds.
Wonderful show. Good night and goodbye.
Mr. Walter Pierce, our student host, close out the show.
Yes, and I would like to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. And
youth
I hope
radio, yes.
I hope to hear from everybody again in the when we do this show again. Make sure you tune in at the same time, 10 o'clock on Saturday, so that if you want to say something on the show, your voice is heard. And again, so everybody can say it, Quest Youth Radio is the best.
The
youth
best
radio.
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 And congratulations once again to Evander for his graduation and going to NYU. Congratulations.
Woo!
And that's
congratulations.
It. Peace.
Thank you.
Peace.
You're welcome.